This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Hard times
like that. Hello, welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Tuesday. Let's not waste any time. Let's bring in from the Sporting Tribune, Grant Mona. Grant, how are you?
Good, Arash, except for the fact that we may not have basketball until June 6th because two of these teams are just going off.
It's such a great point. The league released the NBA Finals schedule, and the reason that they could do that is that the Celtics will have home court advantage regardless. So they basically said, you know, whether it's Dallas or Denver, here is the schedule for the NBA Finals. And if the Western Conference Finals comes to a close tonight, like, we're not going to have basketball for over a week. The reason that I talked to someone with the league a week ago, and they said, well, we have to schedule these things because we have international media. So we can't just say just because the conference finals were done in a sweep that we're going to start like in a couple of days. Like, you know, you have people traveling in from Europe, from, China and all over the world, really. So that part of it, I get. You know, be rough not to have basketball for over a week. But let's start here. The Celtics, again, I don't want to knock a team that basically just plays who's in front of them. And Grant, they have been so far and away the best team in the Eastern Conference this season. When you look at, you know, I forgot what it was, went, you know, 10 to 12 to 13 games above the number two seed. They've been the best team in the league. I mean, again, I thought for the longest time that Denver, you know, once they got into the playoffs, once they got rolling, they would beat the Celtics in the finals. And now we got to figure out, you know, can Dallas do it? But let's start with the Celtics. Again, a lot has been made about them having the easiest path to the finals in terms of the teams that they've played, having a star player or more out. Like, it is what it is. Your thoughts on the Celtics completing the four-game sweep over the Pacers?
It's completely shocking, in my opinion, Arash, just because, I mean, I thought the Pacers would get at least two. And, you know, honestly, they could have taken three. If we look at some of the games in the series, almost every single game was, it really reminded me, and our good friend Jake Dicker brought this up in our chat, it reminded me a lot of last year's Nuggets-Lakers series, right, where, you know, you get a bunch of close games, and yes, it was a sweep, but I could easily see the Pacers taking this to six, maybe pushing it to seven, like our good friend Brandon said. And honestly, look, the Pacers played such a fantastic game in game four, even without Tyrese Halliburton. They were without him for the last two games. And they put up great fights in both of those games. And it's just such a dagger to Indiana because, you know, while the Celtics, I still think, are the best team in the NBA left, I think they're better than Dallas. I think they're better than Minnesota. They are the best team in the Eastern Conference, like you mentioned. But even so, I mean, the Pacers could have taken two. They could have pushed them to the brink. I'm not going to say that they would have beaten Boston, just because I like Boston's talent and their depth a lot better. But it's just so unfortunate for Indiana, a team that, you know, all year long has defied odds. They beat the Bucks, and obviously without Giannis and Damian Lillard for a few of those games. And then they beat New York, and a lot of people had the New York Knicks as the heavy favorite. But, of course, they had a plethora of injuries to get over. And then they play this Boston team who was pretty much fully healthy except for Kristaps Porzingis, but it really didn't matter. I think it will matter in the finals. Like, they need him back for the finals. But in this series, they didn't really need him. So for Indiana, like, amazing year, but it's just so disheartening for how it ended, Arash. I mean, this is a team that was up in game one. I mean, they were up by three with 10 seconds left in game one. They took it to overtime. They could have stolen one there. And I remember coming on here and telling you, Arash, that was the one they had to get, because after that, the Celtics adjusted. They knew what to do down the stretch. They knew who to play. They knew the tendencies. And after that, it was just a masterclass of clutch time for the Celtics. And that's the thing that, you know, not a lot of people are talking about, is that, yes, the Pacers did collapse in a lot of these games, but the Celtics' toughness and their ability to fight back down the stretch, their ability to, you know, really come through in clutch time, that's a big thing going into the finals. Like, I know that it was a sweep and you could say, oh, well, there's no competition. The Pacers were very good for a majority of this series, and for the Celtics to get through a lot of those deficits late in games and to come through and get to the finals because of that, I think that's a big mark on them. Like, that's a good thing for them to have on their shoulders going into the finals, because I expect this Mavericks-Celtics finals to be fantastic. Like, the star power there, the storylines that we have, and maybe we'll get to this in a little bit, so I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but this is the storylines of the head-to-head matchups and just the basketball minds of Joe Mazzulla and Jason Kidd. Like, we're gonna have a really close finals. So for the Celtics to win some of these games where they had to come back late, I think that's good for them going into the finals.
What is it about this Dallas Mavericks team? Again, you saw them at the beginning of the playoffs. The Clippers and the Mavericks went head to head. It was a fantastic series. What has happened in terms of during this postseason? This team has continued to improve. Again, the Clippers blew them out in game one of the series. They beat them without Kawhi a couple of times. But as this postseason has progressed in terms of them going into Oklahoma City, in terms of what they've done against Minnesota is shocking. And again, whether this series is done in a sweep or in five, Dallas is going to win this series. So, you know, again, no team in league history has come back from a 3-0 down. So what have you seen from the beginning of the postseason, where you watched all those games very closely, to, let's just say, if this is a sweep, how has this Mavericks team, and how has Luka in particular, grown?
Yeah, Luka is finally playing like the MVP candidate that he was in the regular season. That's the biggest thing that I've seen. In that Clippers series, he was just not himself. And he was limping around. He was turning the ball over at a high rate. He wasn't shooting really well from three-point land. And obviously, he hasn't been a great three-point shooter throughout his career, but he's a guy that can shoot the three ball. Yeah. And he just wasn't in that Clippers series. In the OKC series, there were flashes. He started to get back to himself. He started to get his teammates more involved. And then now in this series, I mean, he has completely taken over, especially in the early games, the first two games. I mean, he was sensational. To take a 2-0 lead going back home, you know, he hit that clutch shot over Rudy Gobert with 1 second left, basically the game winner. Early in the series, and that is prime Luka Doncic. That's the guy that a lot of people have as maybe their MVP. There's a lot of reasons why the Mavericks were 16-2 down the stretch, is because he was playing like that. And not just that, Arash, but Kyrie Irving has just transformed into this 2016-2017 version of himself that we saw with LeBron James. You know, when he and LeBron were on, I mean, they were fantastic. And yeah, there's a lot of, it's really funny, Arash, there's a lot of comparisons of Luka Doncic to LeBron James not in terms of his athleticism, but in terms of how he can control the game, his passing ability, his ability to get to his spots when he wants to, and kind of just control the entirety of the offense. And Kyrie and LeBron, they have this thing where they worked fantastic together. They played off each other very well. So to see like kind of like a LeBron archetype play with an older, more seasoned Kyrie, a guy that has gotten his head straight, a guy that has really played fantastic defense, probably some of the best defense I've seen him play in his career. It's just really cool to see like a LeBron kind of prototype play with Kyrie later in his career. And that's a really cool thing to see. But in terms of what this Mavericks team is doing, I mean, their defense was one of the best in the league down the stretch. In the first couple games against the Clippers, it really didn't show. But after that game four, where the Clippers stole one on Dallas's home floor, that is when they really locked in. And after that point, they really have been a menacing defense. And I got to give a lot of credit to their role players, the guys that they got at the trade deadline. Daniel Gafford has been a crucial part of this team. PJ Washington has been a crucial part of this team as well. He has made some excellent corner threes, some really clutch shots down the stretches in a lot of these games, and even in the last series. And I just think for Minnesota, what a disappointment. I mean, you beat the defending champions on their home floor in the seventh game. You come back and you have home court the next round in this round, and you just put up duds. Anthony Edwards did not look the same. Karl Anthony Towns has been really bad this series. This is kind of what we saw in playoffs past. And their clutch offense is just not good. And that's what we saw in the regular season. So a lot of their flaws are now being brought up by Dallas in a way that I did not expect. I thought the Wolves would win this in six. I thought Dallas would be very competitive because they're a good basketball team. But to see them down 3-0, especially taking home court from them, and just to see some of the faults of Minnesota is so... It's so weird because against Denver, they were crisp and they knew what to do down the stretch and they're great in the fourth quarter and Anthony Edwards took over. And now I'm just seeing, it's like they're a shell of themselves. I don't know if Denver took a lot out of them, Arash, but this is a very big shock to me. I did not expect Dallas to be up 3-0.
Again, we were together for that first game and it was a classic game. And again, a lot of these games have been good, but you know, you go back to that Denver series. And again, Denver was the favorite to repeat. You had Nikola Jokic playing the way that he was. Minnesota going into Denver and winning the first two games of that series. But then, to your point, winning game seven, coming back from 20 points down in the second half, I just think, to your point, that took a lot out of them. That was their championship. I don't know whether they thought it would be a cakewalk. They shouldn't have. But whether they thought, wow, we beat the defending champions. We beat the Joker. We took three games on their home court, and they have just not been the same team against the Mavericks. But you got to give the Mavericks credit. As you mentioned, Grant, the way Luka Doncic is playing, one of my favorite stats, and again, depending on when you are tuning into us, Kyrie being 14-0 in closeout games has got to be one of the great clutch stats in league history. Like, what an amazing stat that 14 times prior to tonight, he's had the ability to close out a series, and he is 14-0, and we'll see if he gets to 15-0 tonight. Las Vegas already has the odds out, Grant, depending on who wins. And again, obviously, we're all expecting the Mavericks to win this series, whether it's tonight or at some point this week. The Celtics are the favorites. Obviously, everyone in Los Angeles, if you're a Laker fan, you're hoping it's not the Celtics to be the first franchise to get to number 18. If it's Dallas, if it's Boston, a week plus from tonight to today, what do you think? How do you think that series will play out?
I think it's Celtics in six or seven. Unfortunate for you LA people that are listening. But us Clipper fans, we don't have an allegiance to any of that beef. So I just have to give it straight. And I think that the Celtics are the better team. But some of these storylines, Arash, are just fantastic. I mean, you have Kyrie Irving going up against the Boston team that let him go, essentially, earlier in his career. He went to Boston from Cleveland. He wanted to leave Cleveland, wanted to leave that situation. He went to Boston, a team that Cleveland hated as well.
Yeah.
And Boston was a team that, you know, they really needed that star power coming off of that KG, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, big three, and they got it with Kyrie, and he was just non-existent there. So you're going to have that. You're going to have Kristaps Porzingis playing against, and I'm assuming he's going to be back for the finals.
Should
he's
be.
Had a lot of time off now to heal that calf, and they're going to need him. So you're going to have Kristaps Porzingis against Mark Cuban and the Dallas Mavericks, who we know that there's beef there. I mean, it's been pretty public, and he's been public about it. Luka Doncic against him, and you just have so many different storylines. Like, one of these guys is going to get their first title. One of these guys is going to have their another finals loss. If it's Jason Tatum and you don't get this job done, what does that do for his legacy? You have a young coach in Joe Mazzulla that took over for Ime Udoka. He could get his first ring amidst all of that stuff. Jason Kidd could solidify his coaching career with a title. There are so many things that you look at in this series and say, Leo, if Luka gets his first ring, where does that put him amongst the greats? Where does that put him amongst the top players right now? Could he be the number one player in the world after he gets a ring this year, if he does? So there's so many things and legacies on the line with this series that it makes for a great finals. But in terms of the basketball, I mean, we are going to have a clash of titans here. I mean, this is great offense, great defense, amazing role players, athleticism. Like, we're going to get it all in this finals, and I'm very excited for it. I know that, you know, I would love to see the team that I would love to see the Clippers in there, because the Mavericks are the ones that beat them, and it sucks to see the team that beat you go to the finals and have that kind of path. But in terms of, you know, I love basketball in general, so I don't care. I just love to see good basketball. And this matchup, I mean, just based off what we had last year, I mean, it was Heat Nuggets, and, you know, not a lot of people watch that. The viewers were really low. The ratings were low. It was a 5-game series. So this one I expect to go either 6 or 7, and now you have star power on each side to supplement that. So I'm very excited for this series.
Brent, it does seem like J.J. Redick is the favorite to be the next head coach of the Lakers. He will be obviously on the call for the NBA Finals. There'll be a lot of talk about this because, again, you mentioned some great storylines. One of the reports that have come out is that, again, J.J. being a first-time head coach would have a very strong assistant coaching staff. And two people who've been mentioned to join are Sam Cassell and Jared Dudley. Would the assistants change your mind again? Let me start with this. Do you like JJ as a potential head coach? And my feeling is, if he surrounds himself with some strong assistants, I like that coaching staff. But your thoughts again? I mean, he could be calling the game and recruiting two assistants from these two teams.
Yeah, listen, the thing with the Lakers is that I would have liked for them to get a veteran head coach, but, you know, a lot of people are talking about that. There's not really many options out there. Like, you know, you're going to go with Kenny Atkinson. He seems pretty comfortable in Golden State. Yeah. You're not going to go with a guy like Terry Stotts. Like, I think his head coaching days are gone. So there's really not many, like, you know, Mike Budenholzer's gone already, so you can't really hire him. Yeah. Ty Lue's under contract right now with the Clippers. So, you know, all these people saying, I was one of them saying, oh, well, they should get a veteran head coach. And then I kind of looked at it and I said, well, there's really not many out there that you can go get to say, oh, wow, what a home run hire. So if you can get a young guy or a guy that's getting into coaching, you know, right now, a guy in J.J. Redick who is an excellent basketball mind. I mean, I know it because I listen to a lot of his podcasts, a lot of his shows. He's an excellent basketball mind, and he knows the game and the ins and outs of it. And obviously he has that rapport with LeBron James, you know, because of their pod. So, and you're always going to want to cater to LeBron. But in terms of the assistants, assistant coaches are very underrated, and I think a lot of people don't really take that into account when they're thinking of, oh, well, we just hired him. Okay, well, who's going to be the defensive guy? Who's going to be their offensive guy? Who's going to be the X's and O's guy? You need to have a great staff, and that's why Dallas is doing so well. That's why the Celtics are doing so well, because they have Sam Cassell on the Celtics side, and they have Jared Dudley on the Mavericks side. They have a bunch of great coaches on that Mavericks staff, so... Yeah. The assistant coaches are very important, and much like why I said Dan Craig leaving the Clippers is so important, much why I said Chauncey Billups leaving the Clippers was so important, and Kenny Atkinson leaving the Clippers was so important, because those guys are talent development guys, those guys are defensive guys. You need a great staff to supplement J.J. Redick, especially him being a first year coach at all, like not college, not, you know, whatever it is, AAU. He needs that support staff, and he needs a veteran support staff as well. Guys that have been there and done that. So I think getting J.J. Redick is great, but supplementing him with a veteran staff, I think, would be ideal. And I think that's the direction they should go.
Real quick, for those who don't consume his pod, and again, if you haven't, you probably should. What is it about J.J. as you're listening to him break down the game with LeBron. And again, I do think, and again, people joke about this, I do think it's important for LeBron to have a good working relationship with the next head coach. So that's why, despite reports that, you know, LeBron is not a part of this, I think LeBron should be a part of it. I think, like, again, the last few Lakers coaches have not lasted very long. So I could imagine this coach being tied to LeBron. And when LeBron retires in a couple of years, then they might have to look for a new coach. But really quickly, before we close out, what is it about the pod that, as you're listening to him break down the game with LeBron, gives you a glimpse of why or how he could be a good head coach?
They just kind of get each other. They understand what kind of plays they love, what kind of sets they like to run, what kind of lingo they like to use. And I think for JJ, it's his willingness to learn. Mm-hmm. In this podcast, you know, he's listening to LeBron and asking him, like, hey, what would you do in this situation? Or what do you like to do when you get the ball here? Or what's a play you would run out of a timeout? You know, they're very, they love to learn from each other. And I think that's the great thing about LeBron, is that he loves the game so much, is that he'll listen to a guy like JJ Redick and say, okay, well, I like that play. Maybe we should run that. So I think the X's and O's with JJ, I mean, he is so fantastic with his knowledge of the game and in terms of the playbooks and the plays that he used to run. I mean, he was a guy that was just a catch and shoot guy. So, you know, they kind of used him as like a de facto Steph Curry, where they would run him through screens, and Doc Rivers would do this all the time, run him everywhere around the court to get him the ball. So he's been in many different situations as well. He's played for different coaches, and, you know, he was a longtime veteran, and he's played in the finals as well. So JJ is an established guy. He's one of the better shooters in NBA history, if you look at his numbers. So he has seen his stuff, and he knows his stuff as well. And I think that can translate. You know, that was something the Lakers lacked, I think, this past year. They needed a guy that knew the X's and O's, how to run out of timeouts, because those are crucial. So him and LeBron, I think they could have a good relationship there.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they're getting basically a test run here. You know, you don't really have to sit JJ with LeBron. They already do it weekly. They share stories. They share a bottle of wine. Again, I do think it's important, by the way, for LeBron to have a good relationship with the next head coach. All right, Grant, you're the best. We will have you back on tomorrow. Let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll be joined by Fernando Ramirez to talk about the latest with the Chargers and the Padres and so much more when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 from the California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Still clown when the underground,
when we come around. Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment, or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline, 310-400-0340. All right, let's welcome in from the Sporting Tribune, Fernando Ramirez. Fernando, how are you?
I'm doing well, Arash. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Wanted to have you on the show for a variety of reasons, but wanted to get your thoughts on the passing of the great Bill Walton. He was a legend in San Diego. He was a legend around the world, but he loved his hometown of San Diego. He went to Helix High School. He starred at UCLA, of course. He was the first star player for the San Diego Clippers when they moved the franchise there. I talked to him years ago, and he said the biggest regret of his life professionally was that he was not able to make the San Diego Clippers a successful team, and thus they moved to Los Angeles. I told him it's not his fault. Donald Sterling was the owner of that team. Not your fault at all, Bill. But listen, I mean, as someone who is in San Diego and in the region as well, just your thoughts on the passing of Bill.
Well, just a real quick story. A couple of years ago, he was at the Hall of Champions here in San Diego. And it was one of my first few assignments as an intern. They asked me, hey, try and get an interview with Bill Walton. So I go up to him and I'm like, oh, hi, Mr. Walton. He's like, please, Bill. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. And I called him Mr. Walton two or three times. He's like, kid, he's like, I'm going to hit you on top of the head until you call me Bill. And I started laughing. He's like, you're not Lester than me. You're not anything. Like, we're on the same level here. I'm like, well, there's a couple of feet of difference between you and I and a couple of rings. Uh-huh. And he starts laughing. And you could tell he loved the city of San Diego. He loved his kids. I remember Luke had just been hired by the Lakers as the head coach. And he's like, you guys are going to make me cry, but I'm just so dang happy about my kid. All my accomplishments, they're okay. But when Luke won his championships, Luke now being the head coach, those are my biggest accomplishments. And he was just such a great guy. And the city of San Diego loved him. I remember he threw out a pitch for the Padres a couple years ago. Everybody loved him. That Helix High School, you have him, Alex Smith, Reggie Bush. I mean, yeah. three legends right there for sure. But, how many games didn't he lose? Four games in college, I think he lost. I mean, he was truly something else. And then obviously he won two championships, finals MVP. The guy was just, he was something else. He was a champion on the court, but he was also a champion off, and everybody loved him. And that smile, you never forget that smile that he had. I know Luke inherited that smile from him, but it's just not the same. And this world got just it lost a great human being losing Bill Walton. So definitely a sad day. I know there was memorials. There was flowers put all over yesterday. And people love down here, Bill Walton. I mean, If you think about San Diego people, Ted Williams, Bill Walton, Reggie Bush, Terrell Davis, and Marcus Allen are definitely in that top 10, if not top 5. So, yeah, definitely sad to see and Junior Seau as well.
Oh, yeah.
There.
Yeah.
And people, remember, Tony Gwynn was from Long Beach Poly. He's not he was Mr. San Diego, but he grew up in Long Beach. I know a lot of people get mad, but I'm like, no, he's from up there. Like, but definitely a sad, sad day. But I mean, you remember all the good times, all the fun he had. I remember when he called a baseball game a couple of years ago. It was funny. So yeah, he just a great human being all around.
You recently wrote a column, Juan Soto returned to San Diego as a member of the New York Yankees. Again, amazing couple of weeks at Petco Park, a record attendance for the Dodgers series, and then that was broken, a record attendance for the Yankees series. If you could first touch on catching up or, you know, doing that column on Juan Soto, what was it like for him to be back in San Diego?
Well, kind of get the sense that, not that he didn't want to leave, but it really feels like the players, the San Diego Padre players loved him. He loved the city, kept on mentioning the city. And I was so, it was about two questions in. And then I was like, can we rip the Band-Aid off? So I asked, I'm like, hey, by the way, it was a weird setting. It was in the Padres press conference room with a Padres backdrop, but they had a little small Yankees backdrop in the middle of it. It just really looked weird. But I just ripped the Band-Aid off and I'm like, hey, like you've mentioned, the city's great. You love the fans, but what do you think the reception is going to be tonight? And I did feel a couple of eyes kind of turn my way, and I was kind of like, well, what are we doing here? Like,
yeah, exactly.
I rip the Band-Aid off and ask him. And he goes, look, he's like, I really don't know what to expect, but I love the city. The one thing he did say is he regrets that he didn't show his best. And you know what? I give him credit for that. Juan Soto did not have a good year last year. On paper, yeah, it looks great. But people have to remember, he really put up big numbers once they were eliminated from playoff contention. So even he knows he had a terrible season. Obviously, if you look at it now, yeah, this season he's having a great one. And that's why I posted a TikTok asking, are him and Aaron Judge the best duo in Major League Baseball? Hell, on Friday, in the third inning, him, Judge, and Giancarlo Stanton all rip out a home run on Yu Darvish. And you know, Arash, Yu is one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball, and they literally took him yard three out of the next four. So that's not easy to do, especially when he was coming in having 25 scoreless innings. So I kind of get the sense that Juan did love the city of San Diego. Now, obviously, Peter Seidler was big. Before he passed away, I remember there was multiple times he said, we want to re-sign Juan Soto. We want Juan Soto. Arash, I truly believe if Peter Seidler does not pass away, I think Juan Soto is still a Padre. Yeah. And it's obviously sad that he left, but... And again, I know he was asked, hey, would you ever close the door on returning to San Diego? He said, no, he would never close the door. He's willing to listen to every team. But Arash, I truly have to believe with the kind of money he's going to ask, yeah. I really think there's only a handful of teams that can afford a guy like Juan Soto. So his market is going to be really interesting. If he can continue the kind of hot streak that he's kind of on right now, I mean, I know it kind of dwindled a little bit on Saturday and Sunday, but I think if he can continue playing at an effective level, he's really going to cash out. But Scott Boras' clients didn't do very well this last offseason with contracts. So Juan Soto's an interesting individual to see moving forward, what is his value going to be when he hits free agency.
It's a great point because, again, when you get to a certain status in terms of, how great of a player you are, again, you talk about the Dodgers, you talk about the Yankees, that's kind of it in terms of, teams that are willing to pay that much. And again, kudos to Peter Seidler, of course, for the amazing job that he did in terms of really making the Padres a player. His passing, there's no doubt that it was going to have a domino effect on the team. Wanted to get your thoughts on the atmosphere. Again, Petco Park is one of my favorite parks, but when it's packed, and it's loud. And again, you got some opposing fans, some home fans. It's a great mix. What was the scene like at Petco Park?
Well, I'm going to be honest. Everybody said that they thought it was mixed cheers and boos for Soto on Friday. But if we're being completely honest, it was about 50-50 in that crowd. There's a lot of Yankee fans.
Yeah.
Yankee fans, Raider fans, Cowboy fans, all those guys, like they're all kind of like the same. That they travel or they live in different places. They all have people in different cities. And then obviously San Diego's a military town.
Yeah.
So it's easy to expect that. But I'd say most Padre fans booed Soto and Yankees fans kind of cheered him on. So that's kind of the way I saw it. But the atmosphere, whenever the Yankees, the Dodgers, like teams like that come into town, and even the Cubs, there's a lot of Cubs fans out here.
Yeah.
But when teams like those come in here, it changes the atmosphere of the city. And it was definitely an interesting atmosphere. The only thing is the Padres can only muster up one run in Friday and Saturday. On Sunday, they got it back and they were able to not get swept. But those performances on Friday and Saturday are a little bit concerning, especially on Saturday when Joe Musgrove pitched so well and they couldn't pull out the game. That definitely is a little bit concerning. So moving forward for the Padres, so there is a little bit of cause of concern, especially when. Again, and I know you didn't ask me, but I just think Tatis and Machado right now are just not hitting well, and that really is hurting this team, to say the least. It's your two big contract guys. Machado right now is hitting, I think, 230. Tatis is at like 250. Like that's pretty bad. So unless they can get hot, I just don't see how this team can continue. And I mean, Profar is doing great. Cronenworth is doing amazing. Luis Arraez, their big acquisition a couple of weeks ago, he's really paying off. But you need those two star players to start hitting. If not, then this team is going to fall out pretty quick. And right now they're at about a 500. They kind of fluctuate between above 500, below 500, one or two games, and then they're at 500. But they really they have a lot of work to do if they're gonna try and make a run at a wild card, because the division I still think it's gonna go to the Dodgers.
Before we switch gears to the Chargers, I wanted to ask you this. Five NFL teams are going to be having training camp in Southern California. You have the Cowboys in Oxnard. The Rams will be at Loyola Marymount in Los Angeles. The Chargers are moving into their brand new practice facility in El Segundo. The Raiders, interesting enough, and we'll touch on that in a second, moving to Costa Mesa where the Chargers had practice. And then the Saints, oddly enough, are going to UC Irvine. Why isn't the team going to San Diego? Again, I'd be curious if there is a place for them to go, if a team wanted to go down there. The San Diego Chargers old practice facility, is that still available? Again, if you have five teams here, you would think one of them would want to go to San Diego. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. First of all, Rosh, you kind of missed your mark. You could have said the Saints come marching in
to
UC Irvine. Yes. So that would have been a good. I actually thought you were going to go that route.
Yeah, I messed up.
No, you're good. Look, I think NFL teams are kind of dropping the ball when it comes to that. Look, I'm old school, Rosh, when it comes to the NFL. I really believe that for training camp, teams should get away from their city. Players should not sleep in their beds comfortably. I think they should be paired up with somebody else. I don't even think the star quarterback or the star receiver, whatever. I think everybody should be paired up. They should sleep in hotels, dorms, whatever you want. And I think they should get to know each other as a team. They're going to be around their team a lot. There's no distractions of the outside world, in a sense. I really think, and that's why I thought Brandon Staley, there was some good and there was a lot of bad, obviously, but there was some good. I mean, he would take the guys out to movies. They would do different things as a team. I think that one time they went, might have been with Anthony Lynn when they went. Yeah, it was with Anthony Lynn. Anthony Lynn took him out paintballing, like different stuff like that. Like that helps with team building. Now, when it comes to I think it's a great idea that the Raiders, the Saints, and obviously that the Cowboys do it, because I really think it helps. But when it comes to San Diego, they have UCSD. They have, you could go to SDSU. You have different places where you could do it. And I'm interested to see if maybe it's because they don't have an NFL team here, but you really don't need an NFL team to kind of get away. So I think that pretty soon the Saints are obviously escaping the heat of New Orleans and how bad that gets. The Raiders are escaping the heat of Vegas. The whole fans thing right now, I think, is still being worked out.
Yeah.
But as of right now, I know that the Rams and the Chargers are the ones that decide if they allow Saints fans and Raiders fans to go to practices. Don't be those kind of fan bases don't be those kinds of people. Let the fans come for the Raiders. Let the fans come for the Saints. That's terrible. In my opinion, if they say no, that's terrible, because what do you like? It's not like those Saints fans are going to turn around and say, you know what, I'm going to be a Charger fan or I'm going to be a Ram fan. No, they're going to still love their team. But I agree with you. I think I think that the NFL should think about San Diego as a location and maybe send one or two teams out here and have training camp. And maybe it's big teams that have a following out here. I mean, obviously, it being a military town, the Packers are one. The Steelers are another one. I mean, I know that's cross country for the Steelers, but still, I mean, and it's a lot of money, obviously, but still, it's a good investment that I think more teams should do. And I really think it'll help with team unity and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. It does seem like these teams want to give back to those communities as well. So allow the fans to come. Allow local Pop Warner teams in Costa Mesa, UC Irvine, whatnot, come. Let's close out on this, or at least let me get your thoughts on the Chargers again. OTA's wrapped up. We're heading into minicamp. After that, I'm assuming the Chargers practice facility will be good to go for training camp. Your thoughts on the Chargers again? It's still kind of surreal, but still cool to see Jim Harbaugh like out there with these guys. So I think everyone's very excited to see what this team looks like. Your thoughts on the Chargers?
I still don't think people think it's real sometimes because I see fans and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Like, how is this possible? This, that, but I really think that it's going to be interesting to see how Jim Harbaugh kind of changes, and it seems like they're still changing the roster. So I'm interested to see if they bring how many more people they're going to bring in. Obviously, we have the June 1st cut dates where some teams can get rid of players and do some of that stuff. So But the excitement is there. I think the Chargers have a pretty, after the draft and everything, I think they have a pretty solid team moving forward. So I'm interested to see kind of how Jim Harbaugh transforms this team and how he decides to build a winner. And like I said, I think this is a 2-year project. I don't think this year they could make the playoffs. I truly think they will. But I don't see them going very far just because this team has been depleted in the past. So it's going to be interesting to see how they'd move forward with this. But definitely there should be a lot of excitement for Charger fans about the future of their team because they finally have a coach who knows what the heck he's doing, to be completely honest.
You know, I think the reason that a lot of people are expecting a quick turnaround is, A, you know, historically speaking, the Chargers have had great talent. But when you look at Harbaugh, whenever he takes over a team, whether it has been in San Diego or with San Francisco or with the University of Michigan, that first year, like they really turn it around quickly. So you just said it. Do you expect this to be a playoff team?
Well, and I mean, in 2011, Arash, if you remember, it was a lockout year. They had a shortened camp. They had a bunch of shortened stuff because of what happened. So yeah, I truly believe that they should be able to make the playoffs. I think they made the necessary moves. The only thing is he's going to be counting on a lot of young players. Cam Hart at cornerback, Joe Alt at right tackle. He's going to be counting on a lot of, and Ladd McConkin, he's going to be counting on a lot of youth to try and help them. But if this youth turns out to be exactly what a lot of people believe that this draft was by the Chargers, then they should be in good hands. But I truly think that they're building something special over there. And like I said, with Jim Harbaugh now turned his hunger from winning, trying to win a national championship for his alma mater, and now winning a championship for a team that he knew, that he was in San Diego. His kids, he played for the Chargers. His kids went to school in San Diego. One of them went to St. Augustine. The other one went to Coronado High School. And he knows the tradition of the Chargers and what the Chargers have been. He knows that they haven't won anything. And now that hunger turns into trying to win a Super Bowl. And I honestly think, Arash, and I'm being completely honest, if he wins a Super Bowl for the Chargers, that's taking one of... one of the biggest loser franchises and turning them into a Super Bowl winner. I think right there you become immortalized, kind of the way John Gruden was able to turn around the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and turn them into a Super Bowl contender or a Super Bowl winner when everybody used to make fun of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for their orange jerseys, losers, this, that, and then boom, you turn them into one Super Bowl winner. That really immortalizes coaches. So for Jim Harbaugh, this could really be a solidifying factor for him if he's able to win a Super Bowl.
Exactly. I mean, you're talking about a franchise that has only gone to one Super Bowl in franchise history. They got blown out by San Francisco. You know, if he gets them back there, if he wins the franchise's first ever Super Bowl, it changes. I mean, he's already thought of as an amazing coach, but I do love the history there in terms of him being a former Chargers quarterback. Obviously, we've all seen the pictures of Justin Herbert wearing that Chargers t-shirt, you know, like when he was a child. So, a lot of interesting things. We're going to have you back on and talk about Dominic Mysterio and what's happening with Liv Morgan. By the way, USA Network, you got to stay on for the kiss. You can't cut out.
Yeah,
but
that was terrible. And then Becky, I mean, will she be back? Is she AEW? There's a lot of good stuff happening right now in WWE, and I think Triple H deserves a lot of credit for it.
Yeah, and we have a exciting pay per view or was a premium live event coming up at the UFC Apex in Vegas, and we'll have you back on to talk about that. Fernando, you're the best. So we will have you back on soon. That's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Worldwide through the hard times, worrying faces, shed tears as we bury brothers close to heart. What was a friend, now a ghost in the dark.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.